when the cognitive load of, you know, having to spend too much of your cognitive abilities on just the numbers, on just the multiples, when that's relieved because MathFact Labs helped them there, they can really dive into the content better.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Michael Kenny, creator of MathFact Lab. So, Michael, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Annalise. Pleasure to be here.
Excellent. I'm super excited to have you on your very first podcast interview.
Yeah,
that's always
too.
Fun, too. So we'll celebrate that as well. But let's set a little bit of context for our listeners as we get started. MathFact Lab is a smarter, research-based way to build true math fact fluency. Created by Vermont fifth grade math teacher and informed by the world's leading math education researchers, MathFact Lab offers online fluency, practice grounded in reasoning, strategies, and number sense, not rote memorization. So I'm going to start there because I want you in your own words to tell us why the heck, Mike, why the heck do this work? Is a big lift.
It was a big lift, but it took a long time to get there. So the slope wasn't too terribly steep for quite a bit of it. I think when I started teaching fifth grade math here in Vermont, which was in 2008, I pretty quickly realized that my students lacked the fact fluency they needed in order to be successful with the content. And so, like, you know, any good teacher would try to do, I tried to help my students, and I sort of fell back on what I remembered from my own childhood instead of, you know, going into the research and also doing what my colleagues were doing, which was really like the old-fashioned conventional approach to learning math facts is like, memorize them, and we're going to give you a time test every week, and that's going to help you, or so I thought. And so I did that for a few years until I was really interested in math education, and there's a program here in Vermont called the Vermont Mathematics Initiative, which is a master's degree program for Vermont teachers to, you know, really deepen their ability to teach mathematics. And when I started taking those courses, pretty soon I came across what best practices are in math fact fluency instruction. And what I found is what I was doing and what the best practices are saying I should be doing were a league apart. So that's when I realized I had to make a change. What the research says is that really the way students should move to fluency, where they, you know, where we can say they know their facts, is basically just a lot of guided practice with what they're doing already in the classroom, which is, you know, in good math classes, I mean, students are using a lot of manipulatives. They might be using 10 frames or number lines. They might be using rec and recs. If they're learning multiplication division, they're probably using area models or dice or dominoes. And then what often happens is that teachers give that great foundation, and then they say, all right, now memorize your facts, instead of using those same tools to help to the point where students know their facts, but they don't know it. Those facts might be embedded in memory, but they didn't get in memory through memorization. They got in memory through application.
Absolutely. And that's the big thing, right? That all of our content, but math in particular, benefits greatly from that real hands-on applied approach and understanding, because that's when students are really fluent.
Yeah. And Jo Bowler, in her article, I think it's called Fluency Without Fear, she tells a story of, I think it was a British minister of education was on a talk show and was asked what 7 times 8 was and couldn't remember. And the thing is, the minister couldn't remember and probably was never taught strategies to construct that fact. So couldn't think, okay, well, I know what 5/8 are. So let me just add 2/8 to that. I can, you know, I can take my 40 and 16, and I can combine those. But if your mathematical foundation is based on memorization instead of reasoning, it's not a very solid foundation. It's liable to collapse quite easily.
And it's interesting, right? Because, you know, and on this program, we actually talk about math a lot because we also, in our own work at the PAST Foundation, which is, you know, the host and the sort of foundational component, right, of Learning Unboxed, we recognize that literacies and fluencies, right, are critically important. But most importantly, that if we have to prioritize a set of literacies, we're always going to choose mathematics, right? Because mathematics lends itself to a different way of thinking. And back to your point, the strategies are critically important to all learning. And yet, what's one of the things that I find super interesting over time that we've seen is often when you're asking educators to make a shift, which is the piece of your story I'm super interested in, that shift that has to take place, that awareness that you had saying, hey, you know, best practices versus where I am, you know, were pretty wide apart at one point in your work. But oftentimes our mathematics teachers, although the greatest opportunity for application in the work that they're doing and the topic that they're teaching, it's fully applied at its very best, can often be the last to get on board to making that transition. So I'm super curious from your perspective, why do you think that that happens? And how does that relate to the way we teach these fluencies?
Let me see if I understand your question. So why do teachers resist the change or make the change? Is that what you're asking?
It's not even so much a resistance. It's a hesitance, right? Because mathematics, when we think about the way we teach teachers to become math teachers, right? It's also rote. I guess that's really where I'm trying to get at is, you know, the practical application of the way learning happens and the human brain, you know, grabs all of this information and really, really targets in on it is contrary to the way we actually are preparing educators to actually deliver that content in the classroom. We see it more stringently. We see it everywhere, not to pick on math teachers. But the reality is it's a harder push often with math educators. And I think it's part of the teacher prep program. I guess that's what I'm really trying to get at, because you led this conversation with, you had this epiphany as it related to your practice.
Yeah, I think I was lucky to be in an environment where everyone was eager to learn new ways. I mean, I will admit I was interested, but at the same time, I wanted the master's degree because it would, you know, increase my salary. But
sure.
When I got in there, what the Vermont Mathematics Initiative did was they didn't really teach us how to teach. They just modeled exceptionally good teaching. They were teaching us higher level mathematics, like teaching me math in a way that I've never been taught before, where it was doing basically what I attempt to do sort of mathematics. And with my math facts is that they take us from what we already know and then give us questions that are just a little beyond what we can do on our own, but are achievable if we put some time into it. And so that was how Vermont, the VMI program, would introduce new material. Show us what we already know, give us a question that's just sort of outside of our ability range, and see if we can get that leap ourselves and then figure out how we did that. So, you know, always approaching new content from where we currently are. And so in Math Fact Lab, and from what the research has said, is we help students construct new fact knowledge from previously mastered facts. You know, if you know what 5 times 7 is, it's not too hard of a leap to get to 6 times 7. Or if you know 3 sevens, you can double it to get to 6 sevens. Instead of thinking of 6 times 7 as some isolated fact, why don't we connect it to previously mastered material? And that's exactly what VMI was doing. And so they were inspiring me to do the same in my own classroom.
I love the fact that they are tapping into things that students have already mastered, right? That knowledge that's owned. It's fully instilled, right? That's really, really powerful. It also plays into another topic we talk about on this program a lot, which is around agency and just honoring students' agency and their ability to think for themselves. Like you're really sort of putting that in play up front by honing that skill.
Yeah, and as outside of math facts, but that was my number one way of teaching, which is often sort of the same as VMI style, is give them a problem that's a bit above their ability, throw them in the deep end and see if they can swim. And typically the kids could swim, and typically they were so pleased and would get super excited to then meet as a group and share how they solved that problem, instead of saying, here's the teacher's already told you how you're going to solve the problem, now follow the steps the teacher has delivered. Instead, here's the problem, now share with us how you figured out how to do it. And then there is that agency, like, wow, this is my mathematics. It's not me doing what you told me to do. It's me finding a route all on my own. And it, like, definitely creates a sense of pride.
And fun, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because when kids see success, it's fun.
And it's not just kids. I mean, I felt the same way with my colleagues, with my classmates at VMI. It's like, wow, I did this in high school, but back when I did it in high school, it's because I followed the teacher's steps and I didn't understand why, and I probably didn't care why. But then I was relearning it in a way that was, it became my own, which was exciting.
Absolutely. Okay, well, so let's dig in just a little. I mean, I have more questions, but let's dig in, I think, to really sort of solidify the context. So share with us about what exactly is it that Math Fact Lab does, or how do you use this tool? And you're training in it, and you're working with other places, clearly, or at least going to conferences and talking about it. So help us understand then, so what is the premise of what you've built out?
I'll give a little background information that for my master's project with VMI, I built a strategy-based program for math fact fluency development. And when I say program, it was not computer program. These were flashcards. This was in 2013. So the reason is, I hadn't mentioned it earlier, is that so I discovered what the research said I should be doing, and then I went to find material to support that, and I couldn't, because everything I found was memorization-based. And I mean, there's research going back to the 1930s that shows that that memorization-based approach really is, some kids need, they're going to be fine with it, but there's a lot of, there's winners and losers, and it doesn't enhance one's ability as a mathematician. So when I kind of was like convinced, all right, this is the approach I want to take, and I couldn't find the material to do it, that's when I decided, okay, that'll be my action research project. Let me start building something. And so what I built were these visual flashcards. You know, you would have a kid would have a flashcard. Instead of just saying, you know, 4 times 7 on the front, it would show a strategy. It would show 2 groups of 7 and 2 groups of 7, and helping students realize, oh, if I know my 2 sevens, if I know 14, I can figure out 4 sevens. So instead of just question, answer, it would be question, model, answer on the back. And that showed promise, but to give kids multiple approaches to the same problem and to, you know, cover everything, it ended up that there was a huge stack of flashcards, and trying to get, you know, 25 odd fifth graders all using the right cards, actually paying attention and trying their best, was a logistical nightmare. So I saw promise in it, but I didn't really seem like it was going to be a win. A few years later, we got what we became one-to-one with Chromebooks. And it occurred to me, maybe, I don't know, a few months into that, that I could put those flashcards onto Google Slideshows. And then we would take away a lot of the logistic difficulties. And so then I created leveled slideshows, like level A, you know, there are your 2s. Level B is your 10s. Level C is your 5s. And so I could pre-assess students, assign them within the program, have them practice with these slideshows. When they felt like, Mr. Kenny, I think I know these, they'd come up, have an interview with me. If that went well, then I'd say, all right, you're ready for the next level. Go ahead. And you're moving from double D to level E, and then kind of move through. And that really became the sort of the foundation of what became Math Fact Lab. A colleague of mine at school has a brother-in-law who's a software developer who likes to take on little side projects. And I told him about what I'm doing. He thought, yeah, I could build this for you. COVID that came around, what he was doing mainly was shaken up so much that he wasn't able to end up developing it for me, and found another developer. But it did give me the inspiration to say, I'm going to dive into this. So I took a leave of absence, and I turned, you know, this basic idea into something bigger. And now it's all 4 operations, not just multiplication.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Grab your copy of my new book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, at your favorite bookseller, including Amazon.com. In Hacking School, we'll dive into 5 key strategies to educational transformation that will forever change your classroom. So it's now a living, breathing thing that has the opportunity to be numerous places.
Yeah. And I mean, it is being used around the world now. So, I mean, primarily in the United States, but, you know, we have customers in, you know, Cambodia, New Zealand, Australia, Singapore, Brazil. It's worldwide. Yeah.
That's fabulous. I love that. Let's talk a little bit about sort of the impact. So when we help our students, and this is something obviously all educators know intuitively, and yet we still struggle with it. We see this still all over the place. It's in popular media. It's in conversations at educator conferences. We still know we have a battle when it comes to mathematics and this idea that kids really turn off. I can't do math, right? And we know, and the other thing that I love about this is that we're talking about this at upper elementary, that fifth grade, that's so pivotal, because if we can't correct this problem or this perception that our kids bring into their learning before they get into middle school, it's very, very difficult to turn that tide. So let's talk a little bit about sort of your experience and the research and what you're seeing with kids utilizing MathFacLab to change that confidence dynamic around math being accessible and math being for all, that we are all mathematicians. Talk with us a little bit about what you're seeing there.
Well, as I had mentioned, like with the memorization approach, there's definitely winners and losers, because there's some people who could certainly solve problems, but maybe not, might not be able to memorize such a vast set of, you know, discrete facts. When you provide strategies, it's more like teaching the person to fish as opposed to providing them a fish, because they then carry, strategies are much easier to carry around than isolated facts. And so I think it leads to success, and that success leads to confidence, and that confidence leads to greater success, and it creates a more I can do. Whereas I think, you know, maybe the math world that you and I were raised in really had some very clear winners and losers, you know, people who just like, I can't do math. And I did not find in, you know, my most recent years teaching that that was the case. I didn't have students who had written themselves off as mathematicians, because sort of taking a problem-based approach to instruction, you know, especially when you provide differentiated sets of problems, then students are all going to be able to find their level of success, their, you know, where they are and where they can see their own growth, and where they can, at the end of a lesson, see that they can do something that they weren't able to do at the beginning of the lesson. And I think where MathFacLab ties into that is it's allowing students to conceive of facts in so many different ways. So like the program uses such a variety of models, whether it's 10 frames, dice, area models, open arrays, number lines, that they're able to conceive of the same problems in so many different ways that it gives them a lot of flexibility of thought. And like I got an email from a teacher the other day who said, we've only been using it a week in the class, but you know, in a math conversation, a student raised her hand and said, oh yeah, that ties in with what we were doing, you know, with the model that we were using in MathFacLab the other day. So, you know, models are really powerful tools, and the impact they have compared to discrete memorization is they're just incomparable.
Well, and once again, it's that application. That practice is great, right? But the application, the ability to apply that knowledge to something, the next thing, right? That's where true learning takes place. That's the leap that we need to have happen. And if we're not seeing that, to your point earlier, we're, you know, memorization, it's a skill set that only has a very short half-life of usefulness for ourselves, right? You know, back to, you know, somebody on television there, you know, a world leader that can't answer the question because they don't remember anymore, right?
And you're talking to a history major who can't remember 95% of facts.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. And that's part of human nature, right? I mean, our brains don't want to store things that we have no use for. So, but strategies, because we can apply strategies, to your point, in lots of different scenarios. And those same strategies that you've built into MathFacLab, you know, apply to other uses as well, not just math. And I suspect that that would be one of those things that, you know, from a longevity standpoint, the students would report. I'm super curious, Mike, about the data. only because I know as folks are listening to this, you know, educators thinking about bringing new programs in or new ways of thinking, teaching, and learning into my classroom or my school setting, show me the data, or how do we know, right? And so you've been at this for a while, and part of it, it's intuitive having been a teacher, but now the program's out there. So talk with us about what the data is telling you about the use of this type of program.
So I've kind of got two types of data. I've got anecdotal data, and I do have a little bit of like actual impartial school data from a, you know, a school that says, we're interested in trying MathFacLab, we're going to run some tests to see if it's actually generating the results we want. And so I'll just start by just saying my sort of what I saw in my own school. So we introduced, this is now the fifth year it was being used in my school. This is my first year out of the classroom, but I was able to use MathFacLab for 3 years in my own school. And so it's an interesting school. It's only fourth and fifth grade. But what we saw is students were able to handle the content in a way that they hadn't been the years previously. So for example, adding fractions with unlike denominators. There is a lot going on that if you don't have a quick ability to think through multiples of each of those denominators and find where those multiples, you know, intersect, it's a struggle, and it becomes highly procedural without a lot of conceptual understanding behind it. But when the cognitive load of, you know, having to spend too much of your cognitive abilities on just the numbers, on just the multiples, when that's relieved because MathFacLab helped them there, they can really dive into the content better. And so that's what we were seeing. And that wasn't just in my classroom. That was in all 10 classrooms across the school. I don't have a lot of hard data outside of that because it's sometimes difficult to get because, one, there's privacy. Two, there's every school is going to implement the program in a different way. But I did have a school the summer of 2024 reach out and say, we'd like to pilot it for a year, and we're going to compare it to another MathFac fluency program out there. And we're going to use a standardized fact fluency test 4 times over the year, and we're going to compare the results. And I'm talking off my head, so I don't have the exact numbers, but this was fourth grade. This was a school district outside of Philadelphia. And they, at the beginning of fourth grade, they think, if I'm remembering correctly, it was around 30% fluency at like their baseline assessment at the beginning of the year. And this is just a multiplication. This is a 100 problem pencil, paper and pencil, you know, time test, you know, not the
standard.
Best way.
Yeah. 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 The gold
the
standard.
Best way to, I wouldn't call it gold.
But, oh, but it's been the gold standard for a long time, right? That's part of the problem.
Yeah. And we actually are building, we're building an online one that's going to, is a much better tool. But from that, I believe it was around 30% fluency on the first test. By the second test, I think it was around 80% the average. So that would have been sometime in the second quarter. By the third quarter, we were hitting over 90% fluency. So this is sort of verification, you know, in a impartial setting that you can certainly have successful results with it. The guy running the tests, he gave me a this is a testimonial from him. It says, our fourth grade implemented MathFacLab last year. By the end of the first quarter of the school year, I had a math teacher with 20 years experience come to me and tell me how much more successful his students were with math fact acquisition and automaticity than he had ever experienced. On top of that, our students regularly shared how much more they liked MathFacLab than other programs that we had used. So particularly that, you know, what that teacher said, you know, that it was having the effect that we want to see.
And fabulous.
Yeah. And it's also just saying that, hey, the research is actually right, that that if students take this strategy-based approach where they're building new fact knowledge from previous facts and they're using models, they're going to be successful. And it's good to see that that is actually happening. And I think in the future, I hopefully should have a lot more data to support that.
Yeah, we'll be watching for that white paper, the publication and journal. So excellent. Looking forward to seeing that. So as we sort of wrap up the conversation, let's close with, what are you thinking about now? Or what's the next thing? You know, I do like to ask my guests, especially folks that are working on innovative strategies and tools that go with those, you know, what is it that keeps you up at night as that sort of next thing that you feel like is really, really important as the iteration of the work that you're doing?
What we're looking to do next is to build a progress monitoring tool so that schools won't have to guess if the program is being successful or not, so that the students will be able to take an online assessment, you know, like that gold standard paper and pencil. But the difference is with that gold standard paper and pencil, you can buy time by answering the simple problems quickly and then spend 20 seconds on 7 times 8. No educator will be able to tell that. But with an online one, teachers will be able to see, or administrators will be able to see, student response to each problem and the number of seconds it took. So you'll have much richer data. It's not as perfect as one-to-one interview, but it's pretty close. You know, that you'll be able to assess as many times as you want over the course of the year. And so you'll really be able to measure growth. And instead of just multiplication, it could be in all four operations. Also would have, you know, like the standards for first grade, second grade, you know, within 10 for first grade, within 20 for second grade. So that's one thing. And also I've been working with a middle school consultant to build an integers operations learning path as well. Been told that there isn't a lot of good conceptual approaches to integer operations out there right now, that it's still a lot of memorize these rules and these tricks instead of really conceiving of it. So we've kind of mapped out the big picture, but now we actually have to sort of, you know, get down to the nitty-gritty and develop it. And so I had hoped that it would be out this fall, but realistically now, my hope is to have it in sort of beta by the beginning of the next school year.
That's super exciting. So, Michael, last thing. If anybody wants to get more information, reach out to you, what's the best way for folks to find you?
The easiest way is just go onto our website, www.mathfaclab.com, hit the pricing tab at the top, and then from there, they can request an 8-week pilot. They can request a quote, or they can even request a call with me and to learn more one-on-one with me.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, Mike, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. First and foremost, really, really important. Anything we can do to improve mathematical education, we're all about that. So we really, really appreciate your work and for taking time out of your day to chat with us about MathFacLab. Thank you.
It's been my great pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.